starting a new series today in the book of Ruth, but our first reading this morning is not going to be from the book of Ruth. It's going to be from the book just before, the book of Judges. So we're going to turn to the book of Judges, and if you'd like to turn to Judges chapter 2, we're going to read verses 6 to 19, and then we're going to have a second reading later on in the book of Ruth. But we're going to start by reading Judges 2, verses 6 to 19. Judges 2, 6 to 19. When Joshua dismissed the people of Israel went each to his inheritance to take possession of the land. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great work that the Lord had done for Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110 years. And they buried him within the boundaries of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of the mountain of Gaash. And all that generation also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, or the work that he had done for Israel. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them, and bowed down to them. And they provoked the Lord to anger. They abandoned the Lord and served the Baals and the Ashtaroth. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them over to plunderers who plundered them, and he sold them into the hands of their surrounding enemies, so they could no longer withstand their enemies. Whenever they marched out, the hand of the Lord was against them for harm, as the Lord had warned and as the Lord had sworn to them. And they were in terrible distress. Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hand of those who plundered them. Yet they did not listen to their judges, for they whored after other gods and bowed down to them. They soon turned aside from the way in which their fathers had walked, who had obeyed the commandments of the Lord, and they did not do so. Whenever the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judge, and he saved them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For the Lord was moved to pity by their groaning, because of those who were afflicted and oppressed them. But whenever the judge died, they turned back and were more corrupt than their fathers, going after other gods, serving them and bowing down to them. They did not drop any of their practices or their stubborn ways. If you'd like to turn now to the book of Ruth, and we're going to spend, as I've said, most of the Sunday mornings throughout July and August working our way through this short book. And I don't know if you've ever seen the BBC series, Who Do You Think You Are? Anyone ever seen it? Who Do You Think You Are? A few people? So basically, in Who Do You Think You Are, they take a different celebrity or famous person, and they take them to historians, and they take them into their family history, and they try to find out their roots and the history of their family. And what makes the program is, so often their roots and their history is full of secrets and surprises that they knew nothing about. It's a series that tells the story of ordinary people from ordinary families who faced both ordinary things and extraordinary events that all went on to shape their lives and also the lives of their descendants, right down to this now famous descendant, this celebrity. And as we start a new series this morning, as we look at the book of Ruth, it's almost like the book of Ruth is an Old Testament episode of Who Do You Think You Are? It's a story of ordinary people, and yet from these ordinary people come a famous descendant, a famous descendant. So we're going to have two readings now from the book of Ruth. What we're going to do this morning is we're going to really set the scene of the book of Ruth and get to grips with the background of it so that next week we can really jump in to where we're going and get into the text of the book. But this morning we're going to really do a bit of an overview of the book of Ruth and the background to the book of Ruth. So we're going to start by reading Ruth 1, verses 1 to 5. And then we're going to jump over right to the end, to chapter 4. And we're going to read verses 13 down to verse 22 as well. So let's read Ruth 1, 1 to 5, and then over to 4, verses 13 to 22. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. They lived there about 10 years. And both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Now turn over to our chapter 4, and we'll read from verses 13 down to 22. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than 7 sons, has given birth to him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. Amminadab fathered Nashon. Nashon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David. I wonder, has anyone here, particularly the boys and girls this morning, has anyone here ever been to a place in the SSE Arena or the Odyssey? And there's lots of things to touch and run around in and explore. Does anyone know what that is called? It's a letter and a number. Any of the boys and girls know? You ever been? It's a place called W5. W5. And W5 is a place in the SSE Arena where you can explore technology and science to understand more and more about the world around you. If any of the families here are looking for a good day over the summer, head to W5, you'll have a good time. But W5 is what it's called. And can anyone hazard a guess to why W5 is called W5? Any of the boys and girls think they know? No? Why W5 is called W5. There's 5 W words if we want to learn about things that quite often we use. Do you know, Lois? No? 5 W words. Oh, I've got a hand at the back, Jake. Where's one of them, yes? What? Why? Well, you've done very well, but where, what, and why? Who and yes? Do you know? Oh, I want to think about it. When, where, why, what, who, and when. 5 W's, which really help us when we're asking questions about things and trying to understand things. 5 W's, and that's why that place is called W5, because it wants you to ask those questions to understand more about the world and more about life as well. Who, what, where, when, and why? And they're very good questions when we come to study a book of the Bible. Who, what, where, when, and why? And that's what we're going to do this morning. As we get into the book of Ruth, we're going to ask these 5 questions, these 5 W's, to understand what is going on at the time that Ruth lived. What is going on in Israel at that time? What's happening? What is this book all about? So we're going to introduce it this morning by asking those 5 questions to prepare us to go through this book in the next couple of months. So the first W we're going to look at is when. When does this happen? And we're told when the events of this book take place right at the start, right in the very first verse of the book of Ruth. And it says in Ruth 1, verse 1, "In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land." These events take place at a very significant period in the history of Israel. They take place in the time of the judges. That's why we read from the book of Judges at the start of the service. The book of Ruth is set in this time frame, the time frame of the book before it in the Bible, the book of Judges. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And if you think of the Bible timeline, the story of the Bible, we think of the story of Joseph. Remember Jacob and his 12 sons, and through the providence of God, they end up living in Egypt through a time of another famine, and they stay there, and one family explodes into a whole nation that's living within Egypt, but the Egyptians are getting worried about them. They make them into their slaves, and God begins to work in one family. And as the murderous Pharaoh stretches out his hands to get rid of the Israelite baby boys, one couple, ordinary couple, in an act of faith, hide their baby son. And in the providence of God, he ends up in the royal household of Egypt. And his name is Moses. And he grows up associating more and more with this oppressed nation, these slaves, these Hebrews, rather than the royalty of Egypt. And one day he steps in to protect his Hebrew brother, and he kills an Egyptian, and he flees. And he spends 40 years as a shepherd in an obscure wilderness. And then the Almighty God reveals himself to this shepherd prince, and he calls him. And he calls him to go to Egypt to rescue his people, and Moses goes. And we see this mighty hand of this Almighty God as he sends the plagues of judgment on Egypt, and he rescues his people. He brings the exodus of his people. He walks them through the Red Sea. He brings the waves upon Pharaoh and his army. And then this God, Yahweh, who's revealed himself, guides his people through the wilderness on their way to the promised land that he's giving them. And at Sinai, the mountain, they receive his law. They enter into a covenant, a contract, a promise with this God who's redeemed them. And they enter into relationship with him. And yet because of their disobedience, this generation die in the wilderness. Moses, because of his failings, never gets into the promised land. He just glimpses it. And then we have Joshua, the next leader. The conquest of the land falls to Joshua, who with the help of God boldly leads the people in to take the land that God had promised them. They bring judgment on the ungodly inhabitants of the land. God gives them victory as the land is divided up and given to those tribes, those 12 sons of Jacob. Some of the tribes conquer the land completely. Others fail to drive out all the inhabitants of the land. The people, they follow God while Joshua is still alive. Then it comes time for Joshua to die. And that's where we got our reading in the book of Judges. The people, they follow God while Joshua and the elders live. Those that had witnessed the Exodus, that witnessed the conquest, but very soon, within two generations of Moses and the giving of the Ten Commandments, the people, they fall away. They fall away from Yahweh. They fall away from his covenant. And this cycle starts. This cycle starts that continues the whole way through the book of Judges, again and again. The time period of the book of Ruth, where God's people disobey, they break the covenant. God punishes them by the invasion of the nations around them who oppress them. The people, they cry out to God in their helplessness. And God in his faithfulness delivers them with a judge. But when the judge dies, the cycle starts all over again. Time and time again. Until we get to the very end of the book of Judges, if you want to flick over one page. Judges 21, verse 25. "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." There's no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. This is the when of Ruth. We have an ordinary family living in this time period, living within this constant cycle, this political and national uncertainty, this time of constant moral decay, a lack of moral leadership. And it just seems to get worse and worse as you go through the book of Judges, particularly the last few chapters of Judges that we're going to think about in a few moments' time. They're some of the darkest in the Bible. That's the when of the book of Ruth. That's what's going on when this family lived. The ups and the downs of the judges, when everyone just does what they think is right, and it causes chaos, and it causes destruction. So that's the when. Secondly, we're going to have the where. The where. Look back to Ruth 1, verse 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Immediately, we're introduced to two places. To a place called Bethlehem in the territory of the tribe of Judah, and also to a foreign country, a place outside God's promised land that this family find themselves in. And now the map's maybe a little small, but if you look up on the screen, you can sort of make out these places. I'm going to come over here. If you look just there, under Benjamin, you'll see Bethlehem. That's the Bethlehem we're talking about. And then if you look under Reuben, there's Moab there as well. So they're the two places that are talked about here. We have Bethlehem and we have Moab. We see both these places. So Bethlehem. Of course, we all know Bethlehem. It's a town that we know much of in Scripture. The name Bethlehem meant house of bread. So here's the where. We have a small town that's called the house of bread, that's going through a famine. And of course, we know this is the town that King David comes from. We know this is the place that all those years later, Jesus is going to be born in. But in the time of the judges, it's an obscure place. It's an unimportant place. It's a place not living up to its namesake. It's being ravished by a famine. And yet, it's also a very dark place. It's interesting that Bethlehem is mentioned a number of times in the book of Judges. And you know where it's mentioned? It's mentioned in those last chapters. Those really dark chapters of the book of Judges involve people from Bethlehem. It's very interesting. You see, at the end of the book of Judges, the author moves away from talking about individual judges to painting a bleak picture of moral life in everyday Israel. And there's two main stories at the end of the book of Judges that illustrate this depravity. And they both include people from Bethlehem. In Judges 17, we're not going to read it all, we don't have time this morning, but in Judges 17, we read of a young man from the tribe of Levi. He was a priest. And he leaves his home in Bethlehem in Judah, and he ends up in a place called Ephraim. And he dwells in the house of a man called Micah, who has made a metal image, an idol out of silver, and is worshipping this idol. And this Levite becomes a priest of Micah, using this idol, using this image. And what happens then is armed men from the tribe of Dan, who had failed to conquer all of their inheritance, they pass by. And they think, you know what? We're going off to conquer our inheritance. Let's get this priest on side. Let's use this idol, this graven image. And so they inquire of the priest. And they like what they hear. And they go and conquer what they want to conquer. And so they come back to the house of Micah. And they steal the carved image. And they convince the priest to leave the house of Micah and to come and be their priest. So here we have the supposed man of God of the time of the judges, the priest, the Levite from Bethlehem. And what's he doing? He's participating in idol worship. He's ministering to others with an idol. That's the spiritual life of Israel at this time. That's the spiritual life of people from Bethlehem. Then we come to an even darker story. Judges 19, we have a story of another Levite, one of the priestly line. And this Levite, he dwells in the same part of the land as Micah and Ephraim, but he takes a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah. And she's unfaithful and she runs away back to Bethlehem. And as the Levite goes to her home to bring her back, the girl's father delays him several days with feasting, not wanting him to leave. Finally he does, and he heads out in the evening with his servant and with his concubine. And they're tempted to go and stay in Jerusalem, which was still under the hold of the Canaanites. It hadn't been conquered yet. But they don't. They don't stay in Jerusalem. They think better of it. And they head to one of the towns of Israel. We'll be safe in one of the towns of Israel. So they spend the night in Gibeah, which belonged to the tribe of Benjamin. And in Gibeah, they're warned by an old man, do not stay in the open square. So they go and they dwell in his house. And in an echo of Sodom, the men of the city surround the house. And the old man refuses to let the man out. And as they threaten to beat down the door, the concubine is sent out to them. And the man finds her in the morning, and he divides her up, and he sends her throughout all the tribes of Israel. And the whole nation is shocked by the depravity of what is going on. And the result is a civil war. And Israel loses 40,000 men, and all the men of Benjamin are nearly wiped out. And you may ask me this morning, well, why all this background? Why all this detail? Why are we going into all this? It's setting the scene. It's showing us what it was like at the time when this family lived in Bethlehem. The time of the judges, the time when Ruth lived. And as they set out from their journey from Bethlehem to go and live somewhere else, that's what happened to others who did the same thing. That were the dangers of travel, dangers of staying in places. This is a time of moral perversity, political uncertainty. It's the Wild West of the Old Testament. Life is harsh. Life is cheap in Israel at this time. And as bad as it was to go from Bethlehem to sojourn somewhere else in Israel, to stay somewhere else in Israel, that's not where this family go. Where do they go? They go to the land of Moab. That's our second where. Bethlehem and Moab. Where was Moab? Well, as I've shown you there, it's a nation just above Edom, just under the territory of Reuben. It was about 50 miles away from Bethlehem. And it was a nation whose origins are described in the book of Genesis. Well, remember Lot? And Lot had two daughters, and the daughters trick their father into providing them offspring. And one of the sons is called Moab, and he goes on to father this nation of the Moabites. And the Moabites soon became the enemies of Israel. If you read the book of Numbers, and you know the story of the prophet Balaam, it's very well known for the donkey that talks. If you remember that story, Balaam was hired by, or attempted to be hired by, the king of Moab. They asked Balaam to curse the Israelites. And of course, God turns that whole story around. We don't have time to go into it this morning. But they were the enemies. They soon became the enemies of Israel. In Numbers 25, we read this nation of Moab corrupted God's people. They intermarried with God's people. And they caused the Israelites to worship false gods. And a plague came upon Israel. 24,000 Israelites die. In Deuteronomy 23, verse 3, the Israelites are told that no Moabite could ever enter the assembly of the Lord. Enemies. Enemies of God's people. We turn to Judges chapter 3, and the people turn away from God, and what happens? Moab invade. They enslave God's people for 18 years until Ehud is raised up as a judge to deliver them. Moab is the place of the enemy. Known for corrupting God's people to stray. And if we thought leaving Bethlehem for somewhere else in Israel was bad, here we have a family leaving Bethlehem and going to Moab. Who knows what's going to happen to them there? It's an evil nation. It's an enemy nation. It's a pagan nation. That's the where this morning. Bethlehem and Moab. So we're going to move a bit faster now. We're going to clump two of our W's together, and we're going to look at who and what at the same time. So what's the who and the what? Look at verses 2-5 of Ruth chapter 1. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Epaphrites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went to the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. They lived there about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. So we see the who. We're introduced to a family, a man, his wife, and his two sons. And in a time of moral perversity in Israel, they seem to be a godly family. How can we tell that? Well, names often reflect the character of individuals in the Old Testament. If you have a biblical name, quite often if you break it down, my name's Daniel, Daniel, which means God is my judge. And if you know anything of the story of Daniel, if you think of the name of Naomi, means pleasantness, and of course she changes her name to Mara, which means bitterness. Names can reflect character. They can reflect feeling. The father, the head of this house, what is he called? He's called Elimelech. The name Elimelech means God is king. God is king. Now think about that for a moment. What do we read at the end of the book of Judges? There was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And yet at a time when there's no king, everyone is doing what they think is right, we have a man who is called God is King. And if he follows the usual pattern of names matching character in the Old Testament, he stands out as different. He has a king. God is my king. He follows Yahweh. He doesn't do what is right in his own eyes. And as we work through the book of Ruth, we see a family who are aware of Yahweh, so much so that the pagan Moabite Ruth, even through all the pain and the suffering, recognizes Naomi's God and comes to follow Naomi's God. Seems to be a godly family, a family that have God as king. And yet what happens to them? What happens to them? We're going to look at this much more detail next week, but as this family suffer in Bethlehem under a time of judgment and there's no food in the house of bread, they move to Moab in search of food and survival, and tragedy strikes. Elimelech, the head of the house, the one we're introduced to in verse 2, and if you were reading this fresh for the first time, you'd think to yourself, this guy's going to be the main character in this book. He's the breadwinner. He's the family's protector. He's the one whom their inheritance in Bethlehem is all tied up with. What happens to him? Dies. He dies. This is a refugee family plunged into tragedy and grief. And we read on and things just get worse for this family. The sons marry foreign women, which under the law they were not to do. 10 years go by, and the two sons die. And Naomi is left all alone, helpless and heartbroken in an enemy land during the time of the judges. And as we work our way through this book over the next few weeks, this is a book seasoned by tragedy. It's tainted with personal grief. And it's a book that so many of us can relate to, as the brokenness of this world is broken into our lives and into our families, when we ask the question, why? And yet there's someone else in this story that we haven't mentioned yet. Someone who in the experience of this family so often seems absent. And that person is God. Their God, Yahweh. The author of Ruth mentions God 23 times in this short book. And yet, in those 23 times, in the narrative, in the actual action of what's happening, he's only mentioned twice. and what's happening on the surface. And that's so deliberate as we see a family plunged into the darkness of despair, a woman almost giving up on God and on life in the darkness of her grief, and yet God is behind the scenes, and he's with her, even though he is not seen. And bit by bit, it's revealed to this broken woman that God's providential hand has been in it all. And it's such an encouragement for us as we navigate this world with its tragedies and grief to trust the invisible God who's in control. That's the who and the what. Finally, as we come to a close this morning, we have the why. The most important W, why? There would have been countless families who faced tragedy and despair in Bible times. Why is the book of Ruth in the Bible? Why is this family chosen? Why is their story told? It's recorded because the author wants to give us an episode of Who Do You Think You Are? He wants to surprise us with the family story of Israel's greatest Old Testament king, the one who would provide the royal line of the Messiah, our king. That's why we read the end of the book this morning. Chapter 4, after all the trials, all the loss, all the difficulty in this family's life, after all the time when God seems completely absent in their circumstances, we see a God who will use all these circumstances to sovereignly provide a king after his own heart, to break the sin cycle of the time of the judges, and he uses the tragedy of this family to do it. And as we study this book, if you're a child of God here this morning, suffering is not meaningless. It doesn't mean that God is no longer in control or that he's abandoned us. The book of Ruth shows us beyond the earthly suffering of one family in Israel, God was weaving through their sorrow and their pain a plan of redemption. And they would take their place in that plan of redemption that would lead the whole way down to Jesus. Why should we study the book of Ruth? It has so much to teach us about suffering and the sovereignty of God. It's so much to teach us about how God uses the outsider, the unexpected, to achieve his purposes. It shows us how our lives fit into the bigger picture of God's plan of redemption, even in the worst of personal circumstances. We can have faith in the plan of God. It reminds us when the psalmist says, even in the darkness, the dark is light to you. When we're in darkness, even the darkness is light to him. As the hymn says, that we're going to sing in a few moments' time, judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. His purposes will ripen fast, unfolding every hour. The bud may have a bitter taste, but sweet will be the flower.